afternoon or evening. It's your host, Sharnice of Bibliotherapy, a podcast where we discuss current news and literature related to it. Whether it's a poem, short story, or book, there is a piece of literature out there that can help you understand the modern issues we face. It's the second edition of this slightly late bi-weekly podcast. This week's topic is on globalization and nationalism, building and breaking down borders. I'm hanging out here today with Danica, who's a fourth-year comparative literature student and economics, and she's from California. She's here to share her opinion and some of her written works, and as well as a book. So get cozy, grab yourself a cup of coffee or tea, and tune in. Thanks for stopping by, Danica. Woo!
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I like your enthusiasm. They'll keep those woos going. What is your personal opinion on the world becoming increasingly global?
I think with globalization, it has so much to do with technology. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, us, like, being from an international school, even as we saw, like, the events at AUP, like, having the American University of Cairo students, like, we had a lot of the same issues, mm-hmm. but at the same time, a lot of us have not experienced, like, what our peers go through. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of weird to have, like, this disparity between, like, feeling very connected mm-hmm. and at the same time, like, holding a piece of you to yourself, like,
yeah. Holding on to your identity.
Exactly. And that identity usually, like, is formed through, like, the pain of, unfortunately, like, being marginalized mm-hmm. and, like, having prejudice directed towards you or, like, these kinds of things.
Yeah. Us versus them mentality.
Exactly.
Some countries and their leaders, like we said, you know, earlier, fear that they might lose their identity in the face of globalism. Silly old Trump, who wants to build that border along the Mexican border. I mean, clearly there's people who've supported it and people who've spoken against it. And one of those people who surprisingly spoken against it was our former U.S. President George Bush. And during a speech last year in October, he said, "Our identity as a nation, unlike many other nations, is not determined by geography or ethnicity, by soil or blood." I'm not going to read the whole speech, but that's mm-hmm. just one part of the quote. And though I don't really agree with George Bush's views, mm-hmm. obviously, because, mm-hmm. you know, many things that he's done, I do agree with his statement. I want to know, I guess, your thoughts, since you're half American and you're half something else, and mm-hmm. so already there's this kind of, like you said, disparity of, like, having two identities, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then, for us, we have these two identities. And I guess in this day and age, it's, like, almost, do we need to choose a side, or do we need to, mm-hmm. why not, like, marry the two together, and why can't we become global citizens? What's your advice mm-hmm. or opinion on this whole trend of increasing globalism? Mm-hmm.
It does bring about this, like, crisis in identity, because, like you were saying, a lot of the things in America, like, a lot of the public holidays, for example, like, 4th of July, mm-hmm. what is American about 4th of July is kind of, like, I guess this image that they try to sell you, so it's, like, the barbecue, mm-hmm. and it's, like, you know, dressing up in all the colors and, like, whatever, but usually in this image, like, either on the TV when they're selling stuff or, like, in the movies and whatever, there's not really, like, a diversified image, I guess. Mm-hmm. There's no, like, Mexican families, you know, having, like, a barbecue, like, a carne asada and, like,
yeah.
things like that. So it's difficult when you want to be part of your country's tradition. And not necessarily, like, obviously a range of factors go into, like, you know, like, the government and, like, also, like, social media and also, like, marketing and whatever and, like, commercialization. Mm-hmm. But it's very difficult trying to make your own image when, like, it's not reflected back to you in your own country. Mm-hmm. And I say that with quotes because, you know, like you were saying, it's very hard to feel like you have a country. Mm-hmm. Because when I'm in the U.S., you know, depending on what group I'm talking to, sometimes I feel, like, too Latina, sometimes I feel too American. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it goes with class as well. Sometimes when I'm speaking to other Latinas, like, they might be smarter than me, or not smarter, but, like, have had an opportunity to get more education, mm-hmm. or the opposite. have had less of an opportunity, or sometimes they're extremely rich and like there's a disconnect in that sense. So it's kind of like, I guess, working on two levels.
Yeah, I think that like you're not the only one that feels this way. I also have similar experiences to that. And then I think the root of it all is just your identity and what you identify with, and then I guess how attached to your identity you are. Because the international student, the typical AUP student who's, you know, been at least three different countries, like, yeah, I'm from here and I live here and I vacation here and I know some people here. It's like, well, where is your home? And then you have to make that decision, like, okay, this country is my home, I identify as this. Or you can choose not to. It's like what you identify as, and if you choose to attach yourself to it, because some people, IEP, claim that they're global citizens. Simple as that. The whole globe is my home. That's where I'm from. I'm a human from Earth. So, yeah, you know, you're going to read us a piece. So whenever you're ready, like, go ahead and read
it. Yeah, of course, yeah. It's perfect that we're talking about this kind of, like, idea of a global citizen and, like, identity, because that's mainly, like, the inspiration for a lot of what I write.
Yeah.
When I was looking for pieces, I found one that I did in high school and one that I did, like, in the beginning of my college experience, and then one that I did for Trump's election. I think I'm going to read this poem. It's called November 8th, 2016, so that was election day, basically, or like the day after.
Doomsday.
And I wrote it that day, and so I haven't really looked at it afterwards, so like a lot of this is kind of like the passions that I felt before all the conversations started that were a bit more deep.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really interesting to reflect back on it, because it kind of like distills that like momentary feeling of like betrayal, I guess, from your own country, for yourself. Yeah. Okay. November 8th, 2016. My daddy reads me fairy tales in broken English. Being tucked under his arm for bedtime stories is like laying on soft sand under summer suns. It effaces my memory of the cold. I shut my eyes to the world and dream. I don't pray that night, but my daddy does. In my dreams, I am running through fields of corn. The rustling of the leaves sound like his voice, whispering to himself in the dark. Que no nos desampares ni de noche ni de día. That you may not leave us neither in day nor in night. My daddy takes me to the park after work. He is a janitor, but for me he's also a professional soccer player. On the manicured lawns, he shows me how high he can kick the ball, and I watch him turn spotted rubber into shooting stars over and over again. He helps me pick flowers from the edges of the sandbox. With my small fingers, I show him how to pick the petals off. One by one, he watches me yank color off of stem. In a determined sepal siege, petals dripping to the ground like bullets, he pauses me gently. ¿Por qué haces eso? That you may not leave me, day or night. My dad plays 80s classics on a boombox. CD after CD filtered through soft plastic cones, the Bee Gees and Alphaville. These songs color my vision with dance. I now have songs for those fairy tales on my horizon. I'm Sleeping Beauty dancing to Forever Young and How Deep Is Your Love. He plays a soundtrack for each room in our house. He wants me to learn Las Clásicas Americanas. But where are your classics? My dad lectures me on money. I'm silent and my body starts to tremble, even though it knows this siege by heart. This is what your mom teaches you. Irresponsibility. We didn't come to America to be dumb. I didn't steal, but my mouth is Novocaine and rum, and I don't dare to wake my lips up. His eyes are hard, but only as charcoal. He gives way to the slightest touch and sighs. I am confused by professors for other brown kids. I have seen my father judged by his paint-spotted khaki shorts and maintenance boots. I have two brothers who are in the country illegally. I have cousins who could lose their parents. I have a little sister who tells me her classmates call others dirty beaners. I have an older sister who tells me in a wavering voice of what she saw at the border of Arizona and Mexico, and how the images of detention centers burned her heart. I have my story, but it cuts my mouth like unripe pineapple and gets lodged in an inflamed throat. I decide to scream it through my pen, because my father taught me how to tell stories, and I have this narrative mixed up within me of what happened to my brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and neighbors and friends and parents on November 8th, 2016. But my father became a stranger to me before he could tell me what to do when even my hands won't fucking work.
I like it, Dad. That was some powerful stuff. Pretty relevant.
It's really funny reading it, you know, that was 2016. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, a year and a half later.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's obviously a more nuanced discussion to be had on, like, Trump's presidency and, like, kind of how analyzing, like, the demographics and, like, the electorate and, like, whatever, like...
Yeah.
How for a second, you know, like, there was people that were really scared.
Yeah, no, definitely. I remember that day was a huge impact on every American that I knew.
Yeah.
Didn't matter what background you came from.
Yeah, you had some kind of reaction towards it, you know?
You know, a lot of it was shock. I, like, woke up and I thought I was dreaming. I went back to sleep.
Yeah, crazy.
But, yeah, no, it's good that, like, I don't know if it's good. Maybe it is. It's interesting that you haven't read this since you wrote it, and it's, like, self-reflecting on this time.
Yeah. But it's just crazy how having a president who does all of these things that alienates a lot of the population, just because he is president, just because he holds that title, people are, like, their racist, misogynist feelings are, like, they feel like it's validated. Step out of the shadows, or be like, ah, yeah, like, finally, I have, like, you know, the president behind
step out the creepy shadows, like, like, calculating, stroking their hands, and, I don't know. Well, I don't want to make this podcast too much about that guy.
Yeah.
Because people talk about him enough, and it gets pretty exhausting. So I guess we can move on to what the title of your book recommendation would be.
Yay. Yes, okay, so I am recommending a book by Valeria Luiselli called Tell Me How It Ends, an essay in 40 questions.
Sweet.
And it's basically self-explanatory. It deals with the 40 questions that was given on a questionnaire to child immigrants back in 2014 when there was a huge influx of children from Central America immigrating to the United States via train routes and how dangerous that is for them because, you know, you have kids that are as little as, like, 2 years old from, like, 11 and 12 and stuff. So when they're detained, in order to help them, there was, like, a group of lawyers that she worked for, and they gave her these 40 questions to ask these kids, because she speaks Spanish, and blah, blah, blah. And she just kind of went through them, and under each question, she kind of unpacks, like, immigration from South America, Mexico, to the U.S., but also how there's tension there, because she's Mexican. So she also has to kind of confront how her own country deals with immigrants from Central America.
Interesting.
And I can read a quote if you...
Go for it.
Because how do you explain that it is never inspiration that drives you to tell a story, but rather a combination of anger and clarity? How do you say, no, we do not find inspiration here, but we find a country that is as beautiful as it is broken, and we are somehow a part of it. So we are also broken with it, and feel ashamed, confused, and sometimes hopeless, and are trying to figure out how to do something about all that.
I think that's what a huge issue is right now. There's a feeling of a broken country, and then so a broken country feels like a broken you, broken identity. And then to end on this note, what some positive advice to the world would you give to, I guess, people who, you know, are children of immigrants or are themselves an immigrant? Like, what is, like, some words of wisdom and hope you can give to them?
I think, like, the main thing is to, you know, kind of in this fragmented world where you're not quite sure which country you're from, which narrative you kind of fall under, it's really important to form your own story about who you are. And that doesn't just include, you know, people who think like you. It also includes listening to people who you disagree with. But those are ultimately the narratives that are going to inform your identity the most.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, it's definitely, like, very painful to be broken, but it's also a beautiful thing once you do find your story and find out.
Yeah. That was some sweet advice, Dan.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Anyway. Well, that's the end of Bibliotherapy. And